Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over three whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, yo, what's up, everybody? It's me, Joey P, Joe Pizzapia, and welcome to Fantasy Pros. It is me, it is Mike Tagliere, and it's you, and we're talking fantasy football today, and oh my goodness, we've got a monumental trade of a quarterback to talk about today. We're also going to go through the 2020 breakouts of this past season, and whether or not they're an illusion or they're for real, so Mike may or may not take out his magic kit. Do a few little tricks for everybody, which is great, especially if you're watching on the YouTube channel. I know he's got a lot of sleeves that are full of scarves and all kinds of things that are happening today. We're also going to talk a little bit about some potential 2021 breakouts and whether or not there are some early candidates that we like for some best ball drafts or maybe even just guys to keep an eye on in their ADP this offseason. And hopefully we'll get to a little fantasy or reality too, a little fun game we played on the MLB show earlier today. And hopefully Mike Tagliere will make it through alive because old man Tagliere is a cough fest right now. And he is such a soldier, man. He is here for your fantasy football needs, no matter what, rain or shine, healthy or sick. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Oh, man. Well, I've obviously been better from a health standpoint. 75% of my household is sick now. But I learned two things from those intro that you just did. Mm-hmm. So one, that is more energy than anyone that I've ever heard. And I've been doing this podcast for, you know, this is my fourth year now. That is more energy than I've ever heard on an intro. So congrats on that. And then two, you called me Mike. And that is something that's really odd to me because basically it's been tags now for so long that when someone calls me Mike, I think I'm in trouble because it's like my wife, right? Like it's almost like when your wife, my wife, when she calls me Mike, I am in deep doo-doo. And if it's Michael, I might as well just run away.
I told you, whenever I call you tags, I always feel like you're just some lovable children's character.
Winnie the Pooh, right?
I know, yeah. Like, you know, you get stuck in some, like, corner and all, poor tags can't get out, and we have to use some honey to take him out of there, and then tags and Eeyore went on their way down the road. But hopefully things will go well, and I'll call you tags, and we'll see. Right now you're in trouble because you're sick, and you probably should be resting, but instead you're talking football. So we'll soon get after it, but before we do, we want to tell you how to win some free swag because everybody likes free swag here. And Pristine Auction is a great partner of ours here, Fantasy Pros. You can enter to win right now to win a J.K. Dobbins autographed jersey. That's right, J.K. Dobbins. What you want to do is you want to go to fantasypros.com/contest, okay? You go to fantasypros.com/contest, and what you're going to do is you go wherever you listen to the podcast. Let's say you listen to it on Apple or CastBox or anywhere. You leave a great review, hopefully, of how much you love Tags and me and Dan and Kyle and everybody. And then you screenshot that review, and you're going to go in there and drop it into that site that I just gave you there, that link. And it's a fantastic opportunity. You just fill it all out there. You drop, this is my review. Bada boom, bada bing. Next thing you know, you have now been entered to win this free jersey. Now, look,
February 28th is the deadline, okay? You don't have that much time. You've got like 10 days, basically. So get on it. It's 11:59 p.m. Don't wait to the last minute. We just need the screenshot. So go to fantasypros.com/contest to win some free stuff. Who doesn't want a J.K. Dobbins jersey besides Mike, who still is down on him for some reason? No matter how many touchdowns he scored at the end of the year, he still just doesn't like him. And just you're just wrong.
That is Mike. Not true. Just, that is not true.
You don't like him at all. My goodness, Adam Schefter has dropped a huge bomb here. He has agreed, feels like Philadelphia has agreed to trade Carson Wentz to the Indianapolis Colts, which I got to tell you, Mike, or Tags, or, you know, whatever yeah. we want to call you. I think this was kind of a no-brainer foregone conclusion. So it's an exchange for a 2021 third-round pick and a conditional 2022 second-round pick. And look, that certainly could turn things around for the Eagles very quickly. And I think that when you're looking at landing spots for Carson Wentz, I know I've said it on Sports Grid a bunch of times on the TV side. I've heard you say it here a few times on the shows. It just felt like the great fit. You've got the offensive line. You've proved the concept of taking a quarterback from a bad offensive line last year with Philip Rivers, dropping him to a good one, and getting to the playoffs with that quarterback. You had the cap space because of the Andrew Luck retirement. It just all seemed to fit, and not to mention Frank Reich, who really, you know, when Carson Wentz was at his peak, it was Frank Reich who was getting the job done with him. So this is a no-brainer. I think it's a great move for the Eagles. I think it's a great move for Carson Wentz. And I think everybody wins here. So have fantasy owners won, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I do believe that fantasy owners will be happy with this. I mean, if you remember, go back to Philip Rivers in 2019. People were saying that he was done. You know, I remember Dan talking about in the podcast quite a bit, saying that Rivers just didn't have it anymore. And then we saw as his time went on in Indianapolis, where it was just an offensive friendly scenario. Right. And he played really well as the year went on and got better and better. Wentz, I don't know if it's any coincidence that Wentz played his best ball under Frank Reich. Maybe Reich is the genius behind that team that won the Super Bowl. Maybe it's not Doug Peterson. You know what I mean?
Well, you know what? Can I touch on that? Because you brought it up and I want to ask you this. You know, when you think about going back in time, right? Carson Wentz was boy wonder, could do no wrong. Everything was going great before the knee injury. And Doug Peterson was the butt of all the jokes of worst coach in the NFL. Then you have that incredible Super Bowl run with Foles. And next thing you know, that narrative kind of got flipped. And yet here we are a few years later, and maybe you're onto something. Maybe it was Frank Reich. And ever since, you know, things have not gone in the right direction. And what's the common denominator? Well, he's not there anymore.
Right. And the Colts, they were contenders right away under Frank Reich. So,
right.
And despite the quarterback problems, you know, Jacoby Brissett, what did they go 7-9 or something like that?
Brissett? And they started off hot. They actually had a shot at the playoffs that year. And then they kind of
Hilton
fell apart
got hurt.
At the end.
Yeah.
Hilton got hurt and they had a bunch of other injuries too. I think Mac had an injury too, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, that's the thing that you have to think about when you're all this stuff. So Carson Wentz, you know, we've seen him play at an MVP level before. You know, everybody wants to attach to Cam Newton, right? Everybody goes back to say, how did we let an MVP, you know, not get signed and that the Panthers or the Patriots steal him? Well, it's because he had one MVP season, really. He did, as a passer, and that's what helped him win that MVP. And Carson Wentz, we've seen that out of him. We've seen MVP quarterback-type play. We've seen one bad season, and that bad season, basically, that's basically what everybody's hinging this on. So as a Bears fan, I was okay if they wanted to trade for Carson Wentz, but I did not want them to pay the asking price, which, by the way, we heard, which is a bunch of crap, 2 first-round picks. That was never going to happen.
No,
so this
never.
This deal, it's a third-round pick and a second-round pick that can become a first, and it seems likely that it will, because the details that came out is that if Carson Wentz plays 75% of the snaps in 2021, that becomes a first-round pick. So it's basically the Colts saying, hey, if this guy stays healthy, we feel like we're going to make the playoffs. It's going to be worth it to send that first round pick. If he gets hurt again, like Carson Wentz has done in the past, we have protection and we're only sending a second and third round pick for a guy that can play at an MVP type level. So I love this play by them. The Colts were in a weird spot. It was like, you know, you have the Houston Texans who are reeling. You have the Jacksonville Jaguars who are going to be good with Trevor Lawrence. It's just, they're still rebuilding where it's like, it's the Colts' time to shine. And it was like, all right, Rivers retired. Anthony Costanzo retired. Your starting left tackle. You have Justin Houston coming up on free agency. You have Xavier Rhodes, your top cornerback. Malik Hooker, your top safety. These guys were all free agents. So it was more like, all right, the Colts have to decide, are we going to rebuild this roster? Or are we going to try and win right now? Because we have a window. They're going to win right now. That's what this trade does for me. Carson Wentz can play a guy that can win a Super Bowl. I believe that he's good enough to do that. And this offensive line is going to allow him to play the way that he did in Philadelphia when he was playing well.
And he's only a year removed from being the only QB1 to have a passing touchdown in every single game. Like, we forget that. I mean, that was only 2 seasons ago. It's just staggering to me how we can just kind of throw people away after a bad year and a terrible offensive line. And look, Carson Wentz certainly is to blame for impacting it even worse, sometimes trying to do too much, sort of doubling down and making a bad situation an even worse situation. But I think this is a great short-term and long-term move for the Colts. You're right. The Colts clearly proved that they belong in the AFC. They took the Bills to their limit. They almost won that football game. You could argue they could have, should have won that football game in the playoffs. And I think this is a no-brainer here. Put him back with Reich, and I think we can safely buy back in, because Wentz was one of the safer QBs before you head into 2020, and then it all just fell apart. And look, good for the Eagles, too, to turn the page and see where they're going. All right, hot take. I'm going to ask you right now, where do they go? Is it Jalen Hurts, or are they going to fish around for another quarterback in the draft?
I think it's still up in the air. A lot of people are going to Twitter right now saying that Jalen Hurts is an automatic, you know, top eight quarterback in fantasy drafts. Lock it up. I don't necessarily think that, because when I was going through the Eagles and trying to figure out what it is that they wanted, what it is they needed on their roster, it was like, okay, they obviously could use a quarterback if they trade away Wentz, you know, because Jalen Hurts is far from a sure thing.
Agreed.
And then, you know, I looked at it and I was like, they really need a linebacker. And I ended up mocking them a linebacker there with the fifth overall or the sixth overall pick. But in reality, they never draft linebackers. I mean, at some point that has to change, and you say, is Micah Parsons good enough for them to do it? But it's very possible they draft a quarterback there at six, especially if someone like a Justin Fields falls to them, or, you know, do they see enough upside in Trey Lance? There's a lot of question marks here with the NFL draft and free agency that I just don't think anyone should jump to conclusions and say that Jalen Hurts is automatically a top eight quarterback. But what I do think is that this is a step closer for you, right? You're a step closer to him under this new coaching staff, having some, you know, confidence behind him in the fact that he can lead this team, because there's no guarantee that they even get a quarterback at six that they want.
Yeah. And you know what? And going back to Carson Wentz too, supporting him with a run game too, for a change. I mean, what a nice change of pace there. So we'll see what the Eagles do. Obviously, work in progress. And by the way, when everyone says jump to conclusions, I always think of Office Space. Is that wrong? That I always just think of the mat, like every time, no matter what it is, no matter what the scenario is, someone says jump to conclusions. And I'm like, that sounds like a fun game I want to play with Mike Tagliere. Another bit of news going to your Bears, too, is Tom Pelissero, his old man Tags, is trying to make sure that he survives the program here. Old man Tags, did you know that NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reports that the Bears and Allen Robinson haven't had any sort of contact regarding a contract since September? I'm sure it's not surprising. But do you have an early landing spot in your head where you think Allen Robinson is going to end up for 21?
It's not surprising at all. Allen Robinson and the Bears have had a disconnect for quite some time. He wants to play with the quarterback. During the playoffs, he kept tweeting about, I want a ring. And I don't blame him, man.
Yeah. He's played with some rough quarterbacks in his career.
Right. And that's why, to me, I think he obviously wants to go to free agency. I don't think he wants to re-sign with the Bears, because if they had something to offer him, they would have gotten that deal done. But there's reports of a sign and trade potentially that the Bears are exploring with that. I have the Ravens as the destination for Allen Robinson. You know,
this is terrible. You and I think way too much alike. This is either going to be the greatest thing in the world or the worst, probably the greatest, let's be honest. But I said the same thing for weeks now, that doesn't it just make sense to have a guy who can get open on his own, a guy that you can really rely on, and let's see if Lamar can go back to being as good of a pocket passer as he was in college, because he was better than people gave him credit for.
Yeah, no, and he's improved in the NFL. I mean, now he just doesn't have that possession-style receiver, and Marquise Brown's not that guy.
No.
You know, Dez Bryant coming back after being out of the game for a couple of years, he's
Dez
not
Bryant's
that guy.
Dez Bryant's 110 years old. Come
yeah,
on, let's,
and that's what I'm saying. Like, he just needs that possession-style receiver. I think Allen Robinson is a perfect guy for that, and I think another team to watch, and I think it might sound crazy to some people, but the Seahawks are a team to watch, because if Allen Robinson is willing to take like a team friendly deal, say I want to win a Super Bowl, and you know, joining DK Metcalf as like DK is like that field stretcher that can play a different roles, right? Allen Robinson plays the intermediate area, and then you have Tyler Lockett playing in the slot.
My God, do they have the cap space even with a friendly deal to make that work though?
Well, that's the thing. There are some moves that have to be made around it, but they're not negative in the cap right now. So I think there's a chance. Like if he's willing to take a short term deal to try and win a ring, I think that team would make sense.
Yeah, look, I'm with you on the Ravens, though. I think that's the most logical spot there. And look, it'll make Hollywood Brown better, too. Hollywood Brown is a mistake wide receiver. When you watch him, I'm sure you've seen this, too. That touchdown run that he had there, where it was like, how many, five straight games or whatever it was with a touchdown to end the season? Almost every single one of them, I would say probably four of the five or five of the six, whatever the number was, they were mistakes by the defense. I mean, literal, like somebody fell down, somebody missed the coverage, and he's open for a second, and he goes. And that's great to have. But that's not something you can rely on third downs. And everybody knows he's looking for Andrews. And it's just, you gotta figure it out. And I get the idea of this past year saying, well, Hollywood wasn't healthy in his rookie year. Let's see what he is. Well, now you know, go out there and get Allen Robinson, some kind of guy like that. And let's give Lamar something else for this offense. All right. Yep. So going back to 2020 for a moment, we're going to take a look right now and see if we can discuss some of the breakouts and whether or not we're buying or selling these breakout seasons, because breakouts are great. Everybody loves breakouts. After the show, Mike's going to break out some more cough medicine, hopefully, and hopefully he'll make it through. But, you know, it's always difficult because sometimes there's guys that we want to be great, then they're not great right away, and then they do break out, and we're still not buying into it. And that probably fits David Montgomery to a certain extent for some people. Now, I don't know where you were, but I was very encouraged by David Montgomery, you know, coming in there and having the season he had. I do believe it. I was high on Montgomery going in. I've had some problems with the Matt Nagy play calling. I didn't like going into the season starting Trubisky, then having Foles and Trubisky. I thought they should have just started Foles and then let Trubisky come in, be the conquering hero, and things might have gone better for them. But alas, it is what it is. So David Montgomery on the year had 247 attempts. He had over 1,000 rushing yards, 1,070, 4.3 per carry. He also had 54 receptions for 438 receiving yards and 10 touchdowns. So this is certainly a breakout year. Year two, not too surprising. We've seen in the past Melvin Gordon have a great year two. Guys who we were high on didn't have the greatest rookie season. Boom, year two happens, and all of a sudden it happens, and they become stud running backs, and he finished obviously with an incredible flourish. So here's the question. Do you buy the breakout of David Montgomery in 2020?
No, I don't buy it as a true breakout. I'm looking at his ADP right now, or his ECR, I should say. His ECR, because we don't have ADP data yet. Right around RB18, RB19. And I think that's fair for him. I think he's an RB2. And you're going to see his ceiling come down. You're going to see his floor come down. We don't know who the Bears quarterback is. If this offense can't score points, he's not going to have scoring opportunities, which means it's problematic. And then you look at the return of Tariq Cohen. Cohen is someone that the Bears love. You know, they did sign him to a big extension. There were talks about him being sent off to Philadelphia. That was never going to happen. He was reassured by ownership, by the coaches. So he was always coming back. Tariq Cohen is going to get 8 to 10 touches per game. And most of that stuff is going to be that receiving work that David Montgomery was getting. You know, he was getting 5-6 targets per game. And that's why he was so damn reliable. You're going to go back to kind of the player that he was before Tariq Cohen got hurt. And if you look at that sample size, he was never a terrible fantasy running back, but he was never someone that was going to win you fantasy titles. And then you add in the fact that he had one of the softest schedules over the final 6 weeks or whatever it was, and you're kind of like, okay, I'm not buying it as a breakout. I think he's a fine running back, and I think the Bears can move forward with him as the running back. But as a low-end RB2, that's about where he should go. I think this is close to where I had him last year. He was being drafted around RB25, 26.
Right.
I had him around RB19, RB20, and I was saying that if you get him as your RB2 and you want to go wide receiver heavy early, you're going to be fine with that. So I almost feel the same way as I did last year about David Montgomery, because I don't really feel much better about this offense in general.
All right. Question. Should the Bears still be in love with Tariq Cohen at this point?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I believe he's a piece. Now, do they use him correctly?
There's the real question.
No, I don't have any faith in the play calling anymore. I think that Tariq Cohen, if used correctly, he could be a Darren Sproles type player.
Yeah, I mean, certainly has that upside. We've seen the flashes of it, but it's odd. The usage is definitely odd. All right, let's go to another guy that I don't think anybody saw coming. Maybe you did, I don't know, but I certainly didn't. I mean, he was down on the depth chart. He was a guy that if you drafted late, people might have added, or he was somebody that people added right before the season started. And it's James Robinson. And I don't think anybody could argue with the return on James Robinson. You got him for free. And he had a tremendous season, 240 attempts. He also had 1,070 rushing yards, 4.5 yards per carry. He also had 49 receptions for 344, also 10 touchdowns. So now James Robinson is going to be playing with a different quarterback, most likely 99% Trevor Lawrence. So in your opinion, is this all of a sudden in any way sustainable? Or, you know, because I guess there's two sides of the argument. You could say, well, Trevor Lawrence makes the offense better and more scoring opportunities, and that's a positive. But with Trevor Lawrence also comes probably more pass attempts and things of that nature. So in your opinion, do you think James Robinson, number one, was truly a breakout, which I feel like he was? And number two, do you think in any way, shape, or form it's sustainable?
Oh, this is a loaded question. There's so many if
that's why I asked it. I loaded so much into that question. So now you can go.
It's weird. The way you listed this on the show sheet, I see that. Now, looking at it now, I can see Dave Montgomery and James Robinson basically have the same stats. Like, they a lot do. Of it were the exact same. So that's the question, right? Is, like, you have a new coaching staff coming in, and they have loads of draft picks. They have four picks inside the top 45 this year. Not to say they're going to take a running back with one of those, but it's very, very likely that they add a running back at some point. And the question is, how much does he eat in? It's not whether or not they have another running back that's going to eat into some work. Running backs today just do not get the workload that James Robinson got this year. You know, he was basically
typically no.
Yeah. There were times where it was like over 90% of the touches, and that just doesn't happen. So, I mean, we're going to dial it back for sure. And James Robinson, we saw him wear down as the year went on. And then he ended up missing a week or two at the end of the year because he was just worn down. He was beaten down. So I do believe that this is an offense that they're going to involve someone else. And then you talked about Trevor Lawrence. Lawrence has underrated mobility.
He sure does.
He's fantastic.
Is it underrated? I feel like we all talk about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's weird. So does that make it underrated? Because I feel like I know it. You know it. It seems like everybody's going to be doing the write-up seems to know it.
It's a good question. I mean, but if you look at his like early ECR, I don't think I think people are underrating his mobility there because he's obviously a passer that we expect to walk into the league and play competently from the get-go. He's not going to walk in and be Aaron Rodgers or anything like that.
No.
But with the mobility.
But we kind of said the same thing about Joe Burrow last year, right?
It's you true. And I? Yes.
Right? Similar kind of feel.
Exactly. Because Burrow had he had underrated mobility as far as I was concerned. But Lawrence is noted as like the guy that he's a great pocket passer. He's that tall guy that you want. But again, it is like Burrow. It's like Andrew Luck, you know, like he was someone that had some mobility to his game when he came in. I think he scored 5 or 6 rushing touchdowns his first season. That can happen with Trevor Lawrence, and that's going to drag down James Robinson's ceiling. And I don't think this offense is going to suddenly turn into the Chiefs or anything like that, you know, in year one. So James Robinson is going to take a hit, but looking again, I pulled up ECR because I want to see where people are at on him right now, and it feels right. He's right there with David Montgomery as the RB20 in ECR. That feels right to me. I mean, if they don't draft someone of significance, I'm going to move him higher than that, but I think right now it feels about right.
Yeah, I could agree with that. So what, he was 20 and Montgomery was 18? Is that what you had said?
Montgomery was 19.
19.
19, yeah, and then he was number 20.
Number 20. Okay, so neck and neck, which is ironic. Again, we talked about the stats being eerily similar, and I don't even think either one of us realized it until they were both kind of back-to-back there, and you go, oh, yeah, pretty much the same guy, even down to the number of touchdowns.
Yeah.
All right, boys and girls, before we go any further, I want to take a moment to recognize our sponsor, Pristine Auction. Does your man cave or lady cave need a little bit of a sprucing up? Well, Pristine Auction's got the best stuff out there to make sure that your cave looks good this coming football or baseball season. So here's what you do. You go to pristineauction.com today and be sure to put in the code FANTASYPROS, and that's going to give you a $5 credit for all of our listeners. Very simple. It's easy to sign up. They've got some incredible stuff, the authenticity, the affordability, some incredible items. I just signed up today. True story. And I cannot wait to start bidding on stuff. So once again, go to pristineauction.com, sign up with the code FANTASYPROS, and get going to get all the goods that you need to make that cave look extra special this season. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. Another running back came on strong towards the end of the year for the Washington football team. He had 11 touchdowns, actually. Converted wide receiver, so I think it took him a little bit of time to continue to adjust to the position, but certainly saw some flashes from Antonio Gibson. He had 14 games. He did miss some time, 170 attempts, 795 yards rushing, 4.7 yards per carry, 36 receptions for 247, and again, the 11 touchdowns. So Gibson certainly showed that he can be a very interesting fantasy piece. Certainly, J.D. McKissick's presence there this year, he did catch a ton of balls out of the backfield. So it felt like Gibson was a bit of a breakout. I think there were some people low-key going into the season that, you know, especially when Adrian Peterson was jettisoned, and they were like, okay, well, maybe Gibson's now going to get a chance. And it took a little while, but I want to say it was worth the wait, because what you saw towards the end, I think, was at least, the very least, encouraging for 2021. How do you feel about Gibson? Are you buying what you saw last year out of him?
Somewhat. He's someone that I don't even know if Washington is fully buying at this point. Because, I mean, it's like, think about it. J.D. McKissick's not going anywhere. With the way that he played last year, there's no way that they're going to eliminate him from the offense. And it was really based on game script. And if you had a game where where Washington was going to win, it was like, hey, you could play someone like Antonio Gibson in DFS. If you felt like Washington was going to fall behind, it was like, hey, stay away. Because, you know, he did only top 13 carries four times all season. He only topped 75 rushing yards three times all year. Two of those were against the Cowboys. Do they even count? I mean,
they count, but yes.
Right.
Point is made.
Yeah. So, I mean, he scored, I think it was over 55 PPR points against the Cowboys in just two games, which basically carried his season. It was like over a quarter of his fantasy points were in two games against the Cowboys. So
yeah, but he gets to play him again next year, Mike. Don't forget.
He does, and do they get better? I don't know.
Can't
get worse.
Better. I don't want to say they can't get any worse because I've seen things get worse, but you would assume better, but I don't know if great or even good is in the cards if they can really turn that around. Right, I really don't.
But I think even the people that were high on Antonio Gibson coming into this year, because there were a lot of people who were high on Antonio Gibson, they loved him. I don't think any of them would be very excited to know that he topped 25 receiving yards just twice. I figured he would be used more as a receiver, but the addition of J.D. McKissic was real, and it was something that I don't think any of us wanted to admit because he was like a journeyman,
right?
You know, like J.D. McKissic, who's worried about that guy?
Hey, man, I won a ton of money with McKissic on DK, you know, just from the PPR standpoint as like that flex guy or that second RB some weeks. It was just, he was gold, man. He was money in the bank because of the volume.
Right, and Logan Thomas came on at the end of the season. They have Terry McLaurin. They're talking about adding another receiver, like a big name receiver. They might sign Kenny Galladay. They might sign Allen Robinson. They have cap room to do it too. So it's like trying to figure out all that stuff. Seeing Antonio Gibson, it's funny because Gibson's 18, David Montgomery's 19, James Robinson's 20 in the consensus rankings right now. So they're all there. So all these guys really
Not know that when I selected all these guys.
Right.
But I mean, what a funny set of circumstances that are all in there. And look, you know, that's why we're having this conversation because you have to sort of compartmentalize a little bit. Okay, this was 2020. These were the circumstances. And if Mike is right and they do bring in a big wide receiver there, if, Trevor Lawrence comes in and things change considerably in terms of the workload for James Robinson, you know, if Tariq Cohen comes back and changes the David Montgomery profile, these are all things you have to take into account. You can't just be lazy and look at last year's stats and say, oh, it's a breakout. Everything's fine. You have to dig a little deeper and see exactly where you're going to stack up because you do have some great running backs coming in the league this year, too. You have some more guys that were rookies last year that, again, like the Cam Akers of the world and guys like that, you know, DeAndre Swift, where you think they're going to continue to improve. So there's a lot to kind of digest with that. Let's switch gears from the running backs to the wide receivers. And there's no way you're not going to fight on this one because it was definitely a breakout for Justin Jefferson. I mean, there's just no way, shape, or form it wasn't. I was higher on Justin Jefferson than a lot of people, but dude, let me tell you, there was no way I thought this season was coming. I was hoping maybe you could get a Stephon Diggs season, maybe get a, you know, 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns or something like that. Well, he had 88 receptions on 125 targets for 1,400 yards and 7 touchdowns. It was an incredible season for him. And I think what I was so taken with Jefferson was how good he was in certain games where Thielen wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is always the mark. It's the one thing that I remember in the preseason last year, we talked about Calvin Ridley. Okay, prove it when Julio's not on the field. And when you did that, then you knew for sure this is the guy, it's going to be gold. And I feel like with Justin Jefferson, he did that at moments last year. And that was so appealing. And going back to it too, you know, Kirk Cousins gets a lot of, you know, he gets a lot of slack. He's the butt of a lot of jokes, and rightfully so. But if you start to eliminate the bad starts of seasons and look at the rest of the body of work of Cousins, last 2 years were pretty productive. So Justin Jefferson, huge season. The problem is it's so huge, Mike. I feel like it's going to be tough to live up to. Do you? Are you buying or selling the breakout of Justin Jefferson in year one?
I am buying the hell out of Justin Jefferson. Nice. I have him ranked as my number 8 wide receiver for a redraft this next year. So I'm all in. It's not just dynasty, it's redraft too. And I'll be full disclosure. So you said you were high on Jefferson. I was,
and I took a lot of slack for it. People were like, wow, that's just lazy. I'm like, no, it's not lazy. I watched Jefferson play in college. Uh-huh. I think he's a really good fit for Kirk Cousins and the style of play. And it just, there was enough in the offense because you already saw Diggs and Thielen be able to both have 1,000 yard receiving seasons. So you know that there was enough to go around potentially. So just theoretically, when the opportunity and the talent come together, that typically makes for a good spot. Not a 1,400 yard season good spot, but again, he just blew away my expectations.
No, it was ridiculous what he did. And so going back, I had him ranked over CeeDee Lamb in my draft rankings. I love Justin Jefferson. I did have him behind Jerry Jeudy. I will be honest there. I still like Jeudy, but Justin Jefferson was someone I loved. Okay. But however, full, I'm honest.
Right, you're disclosing a lot today. I just want everyone to appreciate all of Mike's disclosures.
Yes.
It's really nice.
I'm forced to do it. But Jefferson, I did not like him in redraft this year. I was lower than the consensus on him. And the reason I was is because going back to the time that they had their training camp, which was like a month long, he was forced into quarantine during that. And so there was 2 weeks where he was held out of the team. And then basically he came back to the team, and the team was, came out in the media where it was like saying the team wasn't really happy with where he was at and his progress. And then all of a sudden, When the first week or two happened, and it was like, yeah, this is basically what I expected. He wasn't even in the starting lineup. He wasn't on the field very much. And then all of a sudden week three happens, and there's like a breakthrough. And it's like, okay, what happened here? And then you see it build, and you're just like, it took me a little while to get aboard, just because it was just like they were based on some big plays. And there was a lot of stuff that he did after the catch where I didn't think that Justin Jefferson was going to be he's not going to be an A.J. Brown type receiver, a guy that's going to catch the ball over the middle field, break a million tackles, find his way in the end zone. Jefferson is a route runner. He's a very smart route runner. But I don't think he's a yards after the catch guy. So it took me a little bit to get there. But then again, but now after the season he had, the fact that he did it the entire time while Thielen was off the field, while Thielen was on the field, Thielen's a year older. Kirk Cousins is obviously still going to be there. The Vikings defense, again, this goes back to the reason I didn't like him in redraft, because the Vikings defense was good the year before, and it was like, okay, Cousins threw the ball fewer than 500 times. Even if we get a bump in that, it's like, how many pass attempts are there really to go around? Because this team did not even feed Stephon Diggs the ball. But now that Jefferson overcame the fact that he was out with COVID during training camp, now that we've seen him basically walk into the starting lineup in week three, finish with 1,400 yards despite all of the things happening around him, it's like this guy proved anything that you like, anything, any of the expectations you set for Justin Jefferson, he exceeded all of them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, why should we not believe in this guy when Adam Thielen is on, he's what, 31, 32 years old now? Kirk Cousins, he's still at the twilight of his career. Kirk Cousins is still fine. They're not going to be adding another big name wide receiver to this bunch. They have a lot of needs on defense. So they do.
You know what, the defense, Mike, I'm just going to throw this out there. That was one of the few real tangible home field advantages. That building was very loud.
Yeah.
And I think that defense fed off that. I think opposing quarterbacks had a really hard time getting the snap out and, you know, everybody communicating. And you saw it. You saw it. It was a very loud building, very tough place to play. And they fed off that. And we took that away, I think you saw the defense collapse. And I think then it started to hurt their confidence. And look, they have personnel issues too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think getting people in that building is a huge win, possibly for Minnesota going into next year, and whether or not that defense can bounce back. And I think it can, actually. You know, depending on how things go with COVID and all these things, mm-hmm. as we continue on through the summer, it's something to keep an eye on, because when you're looking for like a bounce back defense, the Vikings could be one of them if a few tweaks here and there and getting that home field advantage back of the crowd. Let's go to Will Fuller, because this is a player who, obviously, injuries have always played a part, and mm-hmm. my goodness, it was so good. And then, oh, the suspension, oh, the PEDs. Now, over the 11 games that he did play, he did have 53 receptions on 75 targets. He had 879 yards. He had 16.6 on the average and 8 touchdowns. So I don't know what more you could ask over 11 games. Now, there's a lot of uncertainty, obviously, going forward with Will Fuller for a myriad of reasons. So this was, I think, a breakout, but at the same time, it's been so much negative that I imagine you're going to be selling, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't want to speak for tags, so you tell me. I mean, if Will Fuller lands in the right spot, are you kind of low-key buying because everybody else might be out?
It depends. So Houston, if they keep Deshaun Watson, I think it like literally should be tattooed that Will Fuller is going to be a Texan for life, because if they keep
Deshaun, they were terrific. They've always been terrific together.
Yes. It basically depends. If Will Fuller stays in Houston, I'm in. I mean, he's always been good when he's on the field. It's just a matter of when he's going to be on the field. In his draft position, you're never going to have to pay what he's actually worth, because there's always that injury concern. And now you're getting a suspension concern. Maybe that's why. You know what someone said on Twitter, and I give him credit for that, is that they said, whatever it is that kept Will Fuller healthy for the season, it should be legalized.
I saw that. Did you retweet that? I think that might have seen the same thing.
Yeah.
I absolutely saw that tweet. And you know what? 100% right.
Yeah.
Let's just do it.
But if he goes somewhere else, I don't know if I'm going to have as much confidence. Just because him and Deshaun Watson seem to be on the same page, you add in the injury risks. But as of right now, he's the clear-cut target leader in that wide receiver core. So if he's with the Texans, I'm in. But if he's not, then no.
Okay, fair enough. Corey Davis, we've been waiting for years. It's never been a matter of talent. It's always been about health and being on the field. And Ryan Tannehill certainly has transformed the Tennessee Titans offense. There's no way we can argue that against that. So Corey Davis last year, again, 65 catches, 92 targets for him, 984 yards, 15.1 was the average, and he had 5 touchdowns. Now, Corey Davis did have some monster games, so I don't know if that hurts your opinion of him, because kind of like Antonio Gibson, there were some clusters there. He had some huge games and then some quiet games, and certainly he's fighting Derrick Henry if he should stay there, and certainly he's fighting A.J. Brown, and even Ryan Tannehill is a guy who will run the ball in himself. So in terms of touchdown equity, it could be hard to find. But Corey Davis has never been a question in terms of the talent. If he lands back with the Tennessee Titans, if he lands in a spot that maybe is, we look at him and go, hey, this is a good opportunity, good quarterback, good line. He'll have time to, you know, be throwing the ball to. Are you buying the breakout of Corey Davis, or is it too little too late?
I always liked Corey Davis, and I was just waiting for the targets to get there. Right. But I don't think I'm buying in, no. And part of it comes from the fact that I think he's going to be back with the Titans, and A.J. Brown is set up for
Oh, he's a monster. I hated the argument last year so many people kept throwing out. Well, he just didn't get enough. He was too efficient. Too efficient. Like what? That was like when people used to say, all Chris Carter. I understand.
It was unsustainable.
But all you had to do was just realize that it was also his first year. Like, just give him a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. And you know, there will be some more volume and it'll all be good. And what you're seeing is a guy emerge who's just a complete matchup nightmare for defenses. And I just love A.J. Brown, man.
Oh, he's a freak. I mean, come on. Like, that dude is just built differently than other people. I gave him an award in our award show, and it was just it was basically just saying bow down. It was the bow down award, where it was just like, you know, don't try and come to him incorrectly, because he will throw you on the ground. So that's what's going to prevent, for me, Corey Davis. And even if Corey Davis does go to another team, I don't think it's a team that is looking for a number one. I think it's as a complimentary piece. So basically, if the Ravens were to miss out on Allen Robinson, I could see them going with a Corey Davis to pair with Marquise Brown. It would kind of make sense as a cheaper alternative. But I'm not really buying the Corey Davis breakout. I mean, if his ADP is a wide receiver 4 or something like that, yeah, I'll take him there. But in terms of where he finished this year, would I buy at that price? Absolutely not.
All right, let's move on to quarterback here and talk about Justin Herbert, because this is another guy that I think absolutely blew away expectations. So even if you like Justin Herbert, I don't think anybody could have seen him winning Rookie of the Year and playing as well as he had. 15 games he played, he had a 66.6 completion percentage. He won Rookie of the Year. He had 4,300 yards. He had 31 touchdowns, 10 picks. He also had 5 rushing touchdowns, which I think gets lost on people sometimes, which was, you know, one of these things you look up and you go, oh yeah, he did have that too. He played very well. I was most impressed with Herbert down the stretch. I think it was that night game against the Raiders at the time, where he didn't have Keenan Allen. I think Williams was hurt too. Mm-hmm. And he just still was going out there, slinging the ball with confidence. And that to me was really where I said, okay, now I'm buying in Justin Herbert. Now I feel confident, because, you know, when you have great weapons, it certainly helps. The Chargers absolutely had their issues last year, but Justin Herbert, I think, really kind of blew away expectations. This was absolutely a breakout. The question is, are we comfortable now that this is the new standard? Because he has set now an expectation that he is going to have 4,300 yards or somewhere around there. He's going to maybe throw for around 30 touchdowns. And I think there's improvements that you can make, and we'll see with the new coach if they do make those improvements. But for you, is Justin Herbert somebody that you're buying this breakout, or are you selling it? Because, look, it is quarterback, and in single quarterback leagues, you don't have to chase that necessarily. I do think there is a divide between the elites, and if you don't have those guys, you are playing a little bit of catch up. But there is some depth, and you are getting Trevor Lawrence in the league, and you are getting Joe Burrow back healthy next year. So where are you at with Herbert?
I like Herbert. If you were to put him up against someone like Jalen Hurts, I'd take Herbert in a redraft format.
I'm with you.
He was someone that I was extremely down on this year. You know, I still, when I go back, so what I'm doing right now is I'm going through the NFL draft stuff. I'm looking at team needs in terms of free agency and the draft. And every single time I look at the Chargers offensive line, I am astonished at how well Justin Herbert played, because their offensive line is trash. Like, it's legit. honestly, they could use starters at like every position except for right tackle, which is not even a huge pass blocking position. That's more of like
it's basically the same line that Rivers played in the year before. Yeah. And it was terrible then. I mean,
disgusting.
It's amazing that you could have the year he had with that. And you look at the Rivers year before that. Now, granted, he was older, but still, you know, less athletic. We can make that argument. But my goodness, still, what Herbert did, it even becomes more impressive.
Well, Rivers had Russell Okung there. Well, when he did play, and then they traded him away, and it was just like, now Sam Tevy, Trey Pipkins are going to be our left tackle. That's who they played. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. So to see Herbert walk into the situation where he was not the starter, he started week two. And he had an hour notice. It was like, hey, This guy punctured his lung. Our doctor punched him in the lung. You're going to be forced to start. And it's like he walks into that and he just, they didn't want him to keep the job. They wanted to take the job away from him. 100%. Anthony Lynn said it over and over. He's not the starter. Tyrod Taylor's going to be the starter. He played so well that they couldn't give the job back to Tyrod Taylor when he got healthy. So, you know, to set the record for most quarterback like passing touchdowns by a rookie.
It's incredible.
And again, a year where he had no preseason, in a year where he did not start. He didn't start week one. He didn't prepare to start week two. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, he dealt with injuries. Obviously, the offensive line was crap. Mike Williams was dealing with injuries. Keenan Allen dealt with injuries throughout the year. So, the arrow is pointing up for Justin Herbert from a prospect standpoint. Now, a coaching change is one of those things that can shake things up. And it's sure. Like, you might want to dial back expectations just a little bit, but I feel good about Herbert based on what I saw in 2020.
All right, last one here. Let's throw a tight end out there. TJ Hockenson, who I know people had expectations for, especially his rookie year. That first game his rookie year was brilliant, and then everybody was chasing it thereafter. But last year he had 67 catches on 101 targets, 723 yards. 51 was the longest of all his receptions. He did have 6 touchdowns on the year. So Hockenson now has another quarterback to be playing with. It's not Matthew Stafford. So how do you feel about the Hockenson breakout now that the circumstances of the QB position have changed in Detroit?
If everything were to remain static, I'd be selling Hockenson, but I'm going to buy because
you think it comes down.
There's nobody else there. I mean, legitimately, the only wide receivers the Lions have under contract for 2021 are Quintez Cephas, who I do like, and Geronimo Allison. That's it. Everybody else is free agent. They're gone. And now you go from Matthew Stafford to Jared Goff, and that's not exactly great. But, you know, when it comes to tight ends, all you look for is targets. And if they're getting targets, I'm buying. It was like Hayden Hurst last year, and was he very consistent? No, but outside of a couple tight ends, who really was? But he did finish as a top 10 tight end. I think Hayden Hurst finishes number 9. But Hockenson is going to get 100-plus targets. That's just a lock to happen. So, therefore, when you get a tight end that's locked into 100 targets, you're going to draft him as a top 6 tight end just because – even if he's not even efficient, he's going to finish as a top 6 tight end.
All right, let's get to the mailbag because we like our listeners here. And this is from, I hope I say this right, Jakubko. That's a very strong name. I like Jakubko. That sounds like a very strong, it's almost like, I don't know.
What if it's Joe Kubko?
It could be Joe Kubko. But the fact that there's only one capital and it's the J makes me think it's one name. It's Jakubko.
How about we just call him Jobu?
Okay, that's fine. So Jobu wants to know, which second-year wide receiver do you think has the highest floor/ceiling in the upcoming season? And who knows? They may or may not be one of the guys that we're talking about next. So, Mike, there was certainly no shortage of talent in the wide receiver class last year. Many of them surprised. Many of them just, you know, even Van Jefferson in the playoffs, you kept getting these guys that keep popping up. It was like an embarrassment of riches. So who is it that second year maybe didn't have the biggest season you think could jump that ladder?
I mean, he already had a big season, but if you're asking for floor ceiling combo, it's Justin Jefferson. I mean, okay, that's you're getting a floor with him.
Well, let's say somebody else. That's boring. Everybody knows. Yeah. Let's go somebody else that wasn't on the, let's say not in that same pantheon of like the breakout guy. So let's go to that next group, or maybe it's a Judy, or maybe it's somebody.
It's a T. Higgins.
It's T. Higgins.
It's T. Higgins. Basically, like, we need Joe Burrow to be healthy. They are going to add some offensive linemen. They have some cap space. They have a high draft pick. I fully expect the Bengals to be a better football team in 2021 as long as Joe Burrow is healthy. And even on a bad football team last year with A.J. Green stealing what was the 10th most air yards in the NFL, ridiculous, T. Higgins still, he was on the field for 8 games with Joe Burrow, as a starter in those 8 games, he was a top 12 wide receiver. You know, again, I think it's remarkable when you look at what some of these rookies did in 2020.
Unbelievable. Quarterback. Especially considering the circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
All of us were absolutely right to be a little concerned with.
Yes.
And yet they were still so good. And then you still had like Claypool having the big games that he had. And you still had, like I said, Van Jefferson. You still had Higgins. You still had some early CeeDee Lamb stuff that looked so good. It was unbelievable to me. And it really is a credit to the style of play in college football right now, the coaching these guys are getting in high school, even in, you know, their Pop Warner leagues and all that stuff. It's just really improved. And you see it with baseball too. You see, you know, the young kids are just hitting the ground running because the instruction's better. They understand the pro style offenses more. And it's crazy to me. And look, this one coming in, don't know if it's going to be as good because the bar is so high, but Mike, it's pretty great.
It's a good class of wide receivers. I don't think it's as top heavy as last year was, but there's definitely some names in here that are going to make an impact right away. But I think it's remarkable. I think the NFL's changing. You remember the term third year wide receiver breakout?
I do.
So for those who are new to fantasy football, that was actually a thing.
Those people who aren't old like me and Taz.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but basically, one of the stats that I came across from my article was that 25% of the top 24 wide receivers last year were in their first or second year. That's something crazy. That would have never happened 10 years ago. Like it wouldn't have even been in the conversation. You wouldn't have to figure that out. But now we have to start figuring that stuff out. T. Higgins, what he did last year, a lot of guys. There was a lot of guys that played extremely well in their rookie season. But Higgins, despite competing with A.J. Green and all those air yards and targets that he got, despite competing with Tyler Boyd, the running backs, all those things, Joe Burrow in his rookie season, there were a lot of factors here, and T. Mm-hmm. Higgins was still balling out. So he was someone, I don't know why people are hating on him. Like, I saw him as the wide receiver 23 or 24 in ECR, and I just felt like that's way too low. I have him up at wide receiver 15 right now.
Well, I can tell everybody right now that this summer, Mike and I are going to ruin any value that was available for T. Higgins.
It's a good call.
Because we see the same. I mean, it just is. We're going to talk about him all the time, and we're going to ruin it. So draft early. Draft him, get him then, because by the time we roll into the last week of August, it's going to be completely ruined by me and Tex. He's on this list, actually, that I put together of 2021 potential NFL breakouts. So we'll transition right through T. Higgins, and let's talk about some of the other wide receivers here. CeeDee Lamb is on that list for me. I think I mentioned it the last time we were together. Yeah, I remember September, and I remember how good he was with Dak, and I just think this guy is just an all-world talent. I think he's going to fit so well when Dak is back healthy there with the Cowboys, and they're going to fly. Brandon Ayuk, I want to throw into that mix too, because look, it's I love Debo, but I'm frustrated, and I think I need to just step back, evaluate my feelings, and realize that as much as I like Debo and the fit he is for the offense, that Ayuk is healthy and out there and played so well towards the end of the season. Jerry Jeudy, I want to throw in that mix too. Is there anybody you want to throw out that I threw in, or somebody you want to put into this mix? Those to me are guys that all have the potential, especially if Jeudy, when you get Courtland Sutton back healthy and you have Fant there and you get the right quarterback potentially, I think you could turn things around there very quickly in Denver. Is there anybody else for you off the top of your head you want to throw in a wide receiver
pool? No, that's a good group to put out there. And, there are factors limiting all those guys. CeeDee Lamb, he's behind Amari Cooper. Cooper was a stud with Dak there. Michael Gallup is someone that came on as the year went on. He's going to be going into a free agent year. So Lamb, while he's going to be very, very usable, I don't know if he's going to have his true breakout until Gallup's gone.
Yeah, but you know what that does? It does keep him in single coverage a lot.
It does, and it keeps him in the slot. That's where they're playing.
Which is also where I want to
play. That's the question, though. Is Lamb going to be as good once Amari Cooper's cut? Because it seems likely that Cooper, looking at his contract, that he's going to be cut after 2021, and then Michael Gallup's a free agent. So it's like CeeDee Lamb is going to become the guy. We haven't seen him. Like, he played more slot snaps than I think any other wide receiver in the NFL this year. So he was basically slot only, which is good because him coming out of Oklahoma, the cornerbacks that he saw there, that was my concern about CeeDee Lamb, is that he didn't see very good cornerbacks in college, where Jeudy, he saw the best of the best at Alabama. So it was like, I figured there would be a learning curve, but knowing that he was able to go right into the slot, that's like the best thing for him, because it can keep his confidence level up. He can learn the ins and the outs of the NFL. But I'll be curious to see what happens to him when he moves to the perimeter, but definitely like him in the slot. Brandon Ayuk, baller. I mean, but at the same time, you talked about Jerry Jeudy and the quarterback issues in Denver. It's the same thing in San Francisco. If Jimmy Garoppolo is still the quarterback, which there's rumors that that might not be the case, if he's still the quarterback, I don't think they're going to throw the ball enough to support a George Kittle, to support a Debo Samuel, to support a Brandon Ayuk on a consistent basis. And I think it's the same argument that we could talk about in Denver, where their defenses are good enough to the point where they're not going to throw the ball a whole lot. So it can prevent those guys from breaking out. Whereas, again, someone like T. Higgins, he became the number one on his team last year. They're losing a lot of those targets this offseason, and his quarterback should get better in year two. So that's why I say T. Higgins is the breakout candidate of that group for me.
All right, I'm going to throw some running backs at you, too. These are the guys that I have circled right now. Cam Akers, I saw that night against the Patriots, I saw it all. I saw a guy run inside, outside, protect the football, catch the football, score touchdowns, run hard, mm-hmm. run outside. I saw it all. I mean, that's all I needed. And then he did it a few more times. Mm-hmm. So I'm good. AJ Dillon, we talked about him last show, so I don't want to go too much there. Once again, I just think that guy is a beast. And Najee Harris, to me, I actually caught you on another show. Mm-hmm. I was watching, I was getting ready, doing some other things. I was like, oh, look, Mike's on some other podcast doing a guest spot. And you said something once again that I literally said just a week before, which is, I don't want to get crazy here and say this because people are going to think I'm being hyperbolic and saying a little bit, but there's something about Najee Harris that reminds me about Adrian Peterson a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I felt the same way. And I heard you say it and I go, okay, I'm not completely crazy. I feel like this is a special running back. I'm not taking away anything from ATN. He's wonderfully talented too, but there's something about Harris when I watch him run, and I understand it's tough because it's Alabama, and I get all that because he's always running with a great line and great talent around him. And of course he looks great because everything is great at Alabama. However, I think I know greatness when I see it, and it's very, very rare in the Black Book. I know two times we've ever done this. It was Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley when we put a rookie in the first round. And I got to tell you, I don't know where he's going to land right now, but I'm starting to trend in that general vicinity. So do you think I'm being hyperbolic? Do you think this is too much here for Najee Harris, or are you with me?
No, I'm with you. You know, like when I do my big board, people have asked me, they're like, oh, Najee Harris at number two. And I'm like, well, hold up. So the way I do my big board is basically that the players that I believe are cannot miss, regardless of their position, if they are cannot miss players, I'm going to put them at the top. Najee Harris is a can't miss player, in my opinion. Now, does that mean that you should draft him at number two overall in the NFL draft? No, not at all. Like, running backs in the first round make very little sense most of the time.
Right.
But if you get a running back,
well, look, they've devalued the position over years.
Sure.
It's just a different, you know, look, but that doesn't mean that Derrick Henry can't go out there and have a 2,000-yard season. It doesn't mean that you can't see great running back play still happen in the NFL, because it does.
Correct. And I'm not of the camp that says running backs don't matter. Running backs don't matter as much as they used to. Running backs don't matter as much as some NFL coaches think they do. But don't tell me running backs don't matter. You can't put Derrick Henry and David Montgomery in the same conversation. You can't do that because they're different players and they do make a difference. And if you're going to say, oh, that's an exception. No, it's not. If you say running backs don't matter, that means they don't actually matter. Najee Harris matters. He's good. He's a guy that I do anticipate someone taking him in the back half of the first round, because with running backs nowadays, you want that fifth year option. So by taking him in the first round, you get the fifth year option. You never really have to pay him. And it's really crappy. It is the worst thing in the world. For running backs, because they get used, they get abused, and they're just kind of done. You know what I mean? But Najee Harris deserves to be a back end first round pick. I will not fault a team for taking him there. And then, as you mentioned, Cam Akers is someone that it seemed like Sean McVay like really trusted him, especially when it came down to time where it's like, okay, this guy's coming off a high ankle sprain. How good is he going to be? And it's like continually giving him carries while other running backs were available. I want to buy in. I 100% want to buy in. But does part of you feel, Joe, that that it's a little Kenyon Drake-ish, where it's like it's not a new team, but this is the team that drafted him.
I know where you're going with this.
But it was the second half of the season. It was the very end when all teams were basically worn down. All defenses were struggling. You know, every team was struggling. Conditioning wasn't where it was, you know, even last year with these teams. But then you've seen Cam Akers, a guy who had basically no miles on him through the first 10 weeks.
But you know what? I think part of the reason he had no miles was because of the injury. He wasn't healthy. And I think if Sean McVay had his druthers, he would have gotten way more action early on. So it is kind of like a weird chicken and egg.
Yeah.
But you're not wrong. There's definitely, like, if you're going to throw the negative about Cam Akers out there, that's the negative. The negative, it was so good at the end. But then again, do we want to say the same thing about Jonathan Taylor, who was so good in the second half of the season? Do we want to say the same thing with a lot of guys? We talked about Montgomery, how good he was in the second half of the season. So I think there's always that balance you have to walk, because it's guys getting up to speed in the offense, being comfortable, understanding their role, understanding execution, just starting to feel the playbook, being more involved in the offense, and the confidence level is really important for these guys.
For sure.
But there's also the, you know, what is going on in week 15, 16, 17, those teams that are phoning it in on defense. And yes, you have to take that into account. I think the track record of Sean McVay's usage of Todd Gurley is something that I think I would go back to. And I'm not saying it's going to be that, because I don't think he wants to burn out Cam, but I think maybe a version of that is there. And I'm still excited about it, because the way, again, this is also beyond the stats. I think this is why you watch, right? Mm-hmm. Because when you watched him in some of those big games down the stretch, and I keep going back to that Thursday night game against the Pats. I think it was Thursday.
It was Thursday.
And that was just, I mean, you just saw it. And the Pats defense
was
pretty good.
They were terrible.
But the week before, they had shut out the Chargers.
But anybody that watched that game was like, Cam Akers, like, this dude's going to run for 200 yards, and he almost did.
He almost did, and he could have. And look, I think that Akers is somebody that he's going to go right where he should, because there's enough guys still ahead of him the Ezekiel Elliott's of the world, the established running backs, where it's going to keep him in that low end RB1 discussion, high end RB2, whatever. You know, we could debate that as time goes on.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where it is.
For sure.
Cole Kmet is the one tight end I would throw out there because I already think Logan Thomas to a certain extent did break out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's like a big thing. But Cole Kmet, I feel like we haven't seen the best of him. I'm still worried about him, but theoretically, you know, Matt Nagy was able to make Travis Kelce, you know, a thing for a while. So why can't we do that same kind of thing with Cole Kmet? Maybe it's kind of wishful thinking, but Mike, is there any other player at any other position that you want to throw out there as potential breakouts that you kind of have in your mind right now? Again, we'll get more into this in the summertime when we have more data and obviously the draft dust has settled. But right now, in your opinion, is there somebody else you want to like just right off the top of your head, this guy makes sense in terms of breakout?
No, I think this is a really good list. Like the one you went through, there's a lot of guys that are teetering, and it's going to really depend on what happens in the draft and in free agency, because as I've said before, I believe players are going to be cut that wouldn't normally be cut in an off season. I think it's going to change a lot of things, and it's going to create a lot of values in fantasy
and
drafts.
And quarterback movement. We've never seen quarterback movement ever. This is going to be the most entertaining offseason in the history of the NFL because of the quarterback movement. I cannot wait. It's going to be so great.
It's going to be crazy, and it's going to change things all the time. Where we're going to be doing, you know, on the YouTube channel, we're going to be doing mock draft videos where I'm going to be basically going through and reading my mock draft, and it's going to go up on YouTube, and I'm like, hey, this stuff might not be good in 24 hours because like with all the moves that are happening, it's going to have a butterfly effect on the entire league, and right. It's going to change things because people have to clear up like cap room and things like that. So it's kind of crazy. This offseason is going to be one to remember. It's going to be one that I don't know if it's going to get back to normal next year either, just because like with the CBA, they're spreading it out over a couple of years, the revenue lost. So it's going to be interesting. That's for sure. And it's something I'm looking forward to. And, you know, fortunately we get to talk about this stuff all the time and keep you guys updated on it.
All right. And look, it'd be so great that Carson Wentz thing happened like 20 minutes before we started today. Like, how perfect is that? Oh, it's like we planned it. All right. Before we close things out here, we're going to play a little fantasy or reality. I'm going to make a statement. And Mike and I are going to determine if that statement is a fantasy or a reality. So let's start with this one. Chris Godwin will return to Tampa Bay next year. I think Brady loves him some Chris Godwin. So I'm going to put this to you. There's been some rumblings that he is indeed going to go back there. And last time I checked, Tom Brady gets what Tom Brady wants. So the question is Chris Godwin what Tom Brady wants? Fantasy reality, Chris Godwin is back in Tampa.
Well, the Bucs have some decisions to make, that's for sure.
They do.
Because, like, you know, there's a lot of guys on the defensive side of the ball. They apparently they want Gronk back, they want AB back. And if these guys win a Super Bowl, they're all going to take less money to do it. Mike Evans has talked about moving money around in his contract to make some of these signings work. So I'm going to go ahead and say that this is a reality, that he's going to come back. I think it's a little bit unfair just because Chris Godwin was not a high draft pick. He did not make a whole lot of money on his first NFL contract, and this is his chance to cash in. But at the same time, I mean, he makes decent money.
Winning Super Bowls is tempting, my friend.
But at some point, it's like this guy's got to get paid. So it's like, are you going to accept a deal, like a 2-year deal from the Bucks? It seems like it'd be a bad idea from his part, just because you never know what's going to happen from an injury standpoint. But hopefully, the Bucks take care of him if he does stay there.
All right, let's go to number two here. Now, this weekend, I had just the most amazing thing. We have the Switch in my house, and my 8-year-old daughter was over because her sister was at a sleepover. And so my 8-year-old sitting there, we were playing some of the old school games on the Switch, and she's really gotten into football this year. My kids picked every game. We went through every single week together, and I taught her how to play old school Tecmo Bowl on the Switch. And she is obsessed with it now. It is great. After homework the other day, she said, can we go downstairs and play Tecmo Bowl? This is like the most beautiful, wonderful moment ever. I'm so excited about this. I eventually did crack and tell her about Bo Jackson, and we talked about that and how that all works. And you look, now that you've played a couple games, now I will let you be Bo Jackson. But still, this is amazing for me. So I'm going to ask you this question, Mike. Tecmo Bowl was your go-to football video game from your youth, fantasy or reality?
Well, yeah, it definitely was when I was playing football. Okay. I mean, I'm going to be honest and say RBI baseball was my jam. Like, do you remember RBI baseball?
Of course I remember RBI. Played a ton of RBI, but I liked Baseball Stars because you could make your own guys there, and you could like do like the real rosters however they were. Yeah. And that was always really appealing. Plus, you had all those wacky teams like the Ghouls, and you had like, you know, the Legends team where they couldn't have the rights to anybody. Uh-huh. So like Pete Rose was just Pete. And like, you know, Hank Aaron was Hank. Everyone just went by their first name, which was hilarious, but you knew who they were.
Oh, yeah.
I was a big Baseball Stars guy. Tecmo Bowl was definitely it. I also had Joe Montana football on the Sega, which I played a ton. And I feel like nobody talks about that. It was like kind of in that Madden-y's, like early Madden years. Yeah. And I did have the Madden as it got on. But Joe Montana football was underrated, bro.
I got into Madden quite a bit. That was something I wanted to do, roster construction, as I got older. And that was just like the nerd in me coming out.
So shocking to see where you ended
it
up.
It is. Yates mentioned it the other day. I think it was on the Dynasty podcast. He mentioned something about that sometimes he would sometimes even skip a year in the franchise mode. Like you'd almost sim it just because you wanted to get to the offseason and do the draft and free agency and all that. And that, it's funny because that's something I used to do too. Yeah, it was like, dude, I'm a nerd and I'm proud to say it. But yeah, definitely played all those games.
Yeah, Tecmo Bowl was definitely my go-to. And the hot. I just can't get enough of it. All right, last one. Now, look, this is something you can go and check out on Twitter. I saw this trending on Twitter, so I had to click on it. So I want you, if you haven't seen it already, Mike, I want you to open this up and watch this for a second as I'm talking and setting this up. Somebody, I don't know why, maybe because they were bored, they decided to do a whole weird, like, high-quality, high-resolution version of the classic Rickroll Rick Astley never gonna give you up video. And it's so crystal clear, and his red hair is so stunningly clear, and everything, there's something kind of, it's almost like he's in the room with you. It's a little off-putting, but I want you to decide for everybody. So I'm gonna ask you, fantasy or reality, you are weirded out by HD Rick Astley?
No, that's a fantasy, dude. Come on. Like,
you're not weirded out?
No. I see the guy in HD. He's rocking it, dude. This guy, no. Okay. No. I love 80s music, by the way. Like, that's
all right.
That you put on 80s music around me, I'm pretty much a fan of anything nowadays. But 80s is like, dude, 80s get the, like, it just does it for me.
I love that, like, everybody heard this song, but nobody saw him right away. And then when everybody saw him, they're like, what? No, that's not the guy singing that. That's the best thing about Rick Astley, I want to say.
That's fantastic.
And I don't know. See, I think it's reality. I think it's weirding me out. So I'm going to say reality, but it's weirding me out in a good way, because I feel like, you know, he's really communicating to me that he is never going to give me up and he's never going to let me down. And I think that is, at the end of the day, the most important thing. And we're not going to let you down either on the show. Obviously, you can follow us on Twitter at Mike Tagliere. You can follow me at JoePizzaPia17. Again, thanks to our friends at Pristine Auction. Make sure you go over to the site I threw out. I'll throw it out here one more time for you boys and girls at the end of the show, just because it's very important here. Again, you want to go to fantasypros.com/contest to get that J.K. Dobbins jersey. All you got to do is just drop a review, take a screenshot, fill out the form, and bam! You are in the running, so go do that right away. I also want to thank Pristine Auction for sponsoring this episode of the Fantasy Pros Podcast. Just a reminder to our listeners, go out there, go to pristineauction.com, use that registration code FANTASYPROS, and get started on your auctioning today. Again, that's pristineauction.com, P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E, auction.com. That'll do it for me and Mike, but the story of the game goes on. For Tags, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over 3 whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.